gun out of the back of her waistband. He didn't open his eyes, just inclined his head.
"Please, place it in the fire,"
he asked. Anna eyed the fire. The gun was made mostly of metal, and Wellesley's fire wasn't that hot. But she didn't argue with him, just slid it cautiously into the fire. She kept an eye on the fight. The bear had collapsed after Asil's blow. Asil had continued forward, driven by his own momentum, to take 5 or 6 strides away from the bear. He turned to regard the fallen beast. Leia and Juste closed in on it, warily. Charles stirred, then staggered to his feet. The sensation of his pain made her gasp. He looked up to where Anna and Wellesley were, and she could feel his consternation.
"Anna,"
he told her, and she could feel his despair.
"Run, my love. This thing cannot be killed."
"I found a holy man,"
she told him, a bit smugly, despite her worry.
"He's a little broken, I think, but he believes he can do this. If not, I have gasoline and a lighter."
Behind him, the beast's form blurred, shrank, and a little girl, no more than 6 or 7, rose to her hands and knees where the bear had just been. She wore a ragged dress of unbleached cotton, and her dark hair was matted. She looked around her with wide eyes, and her mouth trembled.
"Don't hurt me,"
she said, scrambling away, her eyes on Asil.
"I ain't done nothing to you. Don't hurt me."
Sometime, somewhere, the skinwalker had killed and skinned a child. For a moment, Anna could barely breathe. Charles had turned at the child's first words. Like Anna, he froze momentarily.
"Warn them,"
said Brother Wolf, as their packmates were pulling out of battle mode.
"It's not a child. Anna, warn them."
"It's a skinwalker," she called out. "A shape-changer, a witch. It's not. Watch out, Asil!"
Flowing out of the child's form, the bear, now unharmed, rose again, mad blue eyes sparkling in a stray bit of sunlight. He swatted at Asil, who, warned by Anna, ducked under the swat and went for the bear's underside. But the bear had seen Wellesley, ignoring the huge wound that Asil had made in its abdomen, which left entrails escaping. Ignoring the werewolves attacking it, the bear began running up the side of the mountain toward Wellesley and Anna. Sage didn't know what had distracted Leia. She had hunted with the Merrok's mate for 2 decades or more, and would have sworn that nothing could pull that one off a trail once she'd chosen it. But Sage wasn't going to look gift horses in the mouth. Her car was parked next to Asil's Mercedes, though someone, Anna, by the scent of the blood, had broken the window. Just as well, because Sage would have had to do the same thing. She took the token that hung from the leather thong around her neck and bit it again. The speed of the change made her grit her teeth and shudder. She didn't make any noise, though. She didn't know where the werewolves were, and had no intention of drawing their attention if she could help it. Hopefully, they would be fully occupied with Grandma Daisy. Shivering and naked, Sage opened the door of her SUV and grabbed the backpack from the back seat. She pulled on the spare set of clothing she kept there. Dressed, spare key to her SUV in hand, she drew her first deep breath, since she looked into Jericho's eyes and realized what Grandma Daisy had done. She was an old creature. Sage didn't know how old, because her own grandmother had called her Grandma Daisy. Old predators knew how to be patient. But evidently her patience had run out at last. Ironic that it had happened on the day that Sage had finally found their quarry. Decades of searching, because the Merrok kept his wildling secret from everyone except for his mate and his 2 sons. Then Asil had come to the pack, and he also had been sent to deal with the wildlings. She'd attached herself to him to see if he could be persuaded to tell tales, and because he was beautiful. And he was beautiful. She would regret Asil, she thought, Maybe once her grandmother had the pack under her control, assuming she could torture the secret of the collars from Wellesley, and Sage never underestimated her Grandma Daisy, maybe Sage would take Asil and use him for a while. The thought made her smile. She had worried when Grandma had outed her, worried that she somehow had displeased the Skinwalker. But when Grandma had detonated the stink bomb in Charles's face, Sage had understood. If Grandma Daisy could get Charles alone, if she took Charles, then she could take the whole pack, Wellesley and all. Grandma Daisy wouldn't mind throwing away Sage for a chance at the pack, at the Merrok himself. Sage couldn't blame her, really. But since the chance presented itself to not be a murder, Sage intended to take it. She tossed the backpack into the rear seat and started to get into her SUV. A low growl stopped her. She grabbed the knife she kept in a sheath beside the seat and turned to face... She had worried it might be Asil or Charles, but the wolf who had broken through the greenery next to her car was skinny and ragged, his ribs moving harshly with the exertion of intercepting her. Devon. And he was alone. Gunshots sounded. A roar rose in the forest. Grandma Daisy's bear. And Sage had her explanation for why the pursuit had broken off. Evidently, everyone except Devon had gone to fight the bear. Sage was realistic enough to know that she wasn't a match for Bran or Charles. Still, sometimes in her dreams, she plunged this very knife into their bodies and heard them scream in payment for the pain she'd had to suffer for their actions. If they had not interfered in Grandma Daisy's plans, Sage would have simply been one of the many children who had no magic and therefore served as helpers. Grandma would not have picked Sage to be her werewolf spy. Her life would have been normal. The pain of the change, the torture of being the plaything of Grandma's picked group of rogue wolves. That was all the fault of Charles and Bran Cornick, who had robbed Grandma Daisy of her prey and hidden him away. Even using his hair and blood, they could not find him. Sage knew now that it was because Grandma Daisy's own half-failed binding spell, now broken, had changed the artist beyond recognition. If Bran had not changed Frank Bright's name, though, they could have found him by his true name. All of Sage's suffering was the Merrok's fault. She could not kill Bran or Charles. But Devon, friend of Asil and Bran's special pet, who was weakened by his inability to eat enough to keep himself healthy, once he had been a formidable warrior, she knew. But now... She smiled at the weakest and most beloved of Bran's wildlings. She would take her revenge where she found it. "Hello, hello, Devon," she said. Charles followed his packmates, who were running after the bear as it charged up the side of the mountain, though if dragging its insides up the rocky slope didn't slow it down, he wasn't sure what he could do about it. He was too slow. Even drawing on the pack's power, he couldn't heal broken bones 3 times in a row and get wonderful results. His right front leg hurt so much when he ran on it that he just tucked it up against his body and ran on the other 3. He leaped onto the flattish stretch of ground where Wellesley had set up his fire and took in the scene in a single glance. Wellesley, eyes closed, was chanting over a fire, where it appeared that he was trying ineffectually to burn the witch gun. Whatever he was doing... The Skinwalker evidently thought it was dangerous enough that it was trying to get to Wellesley through Leia, Asil, Juste, and Anna. Leia, Asil, and Juste looked as though they were engaged in the hit-and-run technique Charles had begun with, harrying the bear and trying to distract him from his target. Anna was pelting him with rocks and doing a damn fine job of it. White bone showed on the bear's head as it roared at her.
"There's not enough space," said Brother Wolf,
though he knew that Charles already understood that. The rocks were a distance weapon, and the bear was closing in on Anna. There wasn't time for an easy change, and he didn't have strength to change fast enough with his own power. but his Da had left him in charge of the pack. Without consideration for the limits of that power this time, he pulled on the pack and donned his human shape between one stride and the next. He felt the drain of it in the reluctant slowness of his muscles and the bone-deep ache in his joints. He was going to have to eat a feast and sleep a week to recover from this, if he lived another 5 seconds. Still running, he used the momentum to fuel the left-handed blow as he brought Ophaeti's damned big axe down between the bear's ears and buried it there, up to the haft in the bear's skull. Sometimes, especially when they needed to, objects he was holding when he shifted from human to wolf came with him when he made the change back to human.
"Heal that," he growled.
"Get away,"
called Wellesley, scrambling to his feet.
"Get away from the bear!"
Charles started to take a step back, but an unexpected and sudden weariness caught him. He stumbled, and his mate steadied him and shoved him farther back at the same time. For 30 or 40 seconds, nothing more happened. And then the gun burst into white flames, and so did the body of the bear. Wellesley raised both arms to the sky and sang a song in some strange, twisting tongue. But it didn't matter that Charles could not understand the language. He knew a prayer when he heard one. Chapter 12. One of the most amazing things about the past few days, Anna thought, was that the whole mountainside didn't go up in flames when the Skinwalker burned. They didn't have a fire line, they didn't have a backhoe, and that bear went up with a ton more heat than Hester's house had. The bear burned to ashes in about 5 minutes, smelling disturbingly, given the nature of the beast, like bacon as it did so. When the fire had ended, there was only a pile of bones, left on soil that looked as though a molten rock had pressed into it and left it blackened and shiny. The bones themselves weren't blackened. They were white and clean, and they belonged to a human. Wellesley knelt and pressed his hand on top of the skull, and the bones melted into, well, into nothing. Anna thought of his story, of the spirit of the hurricane who had called this man its brother. She thought about what it had said about Wellesley, something about how Wellesley carried the blood of earth magic and was descended for 1,000 years from a lineage of priestesses, whatever that meant, other than being able to resist a blood magic curse for as long as he had. No one said anything about going after Sage. They weren't in any shape for a pursuit. And besides, they had all heard the sound of Sage's SUV starting up and driving away. Tiredly, quietly, thoughtfully, they took the trail down to the cars. Anna and Charles stayed in their own house that night, Bran's orders be damned. Charles looked like he'd gone 40 rounds with a meat grinder. She wasn't going to bring him into the middle of Pack HQ looking like that. He wouldn't sleep there when he was hurt, for one thing. And she needed to get him alone. Anna fed him frozen pizzas while she worked on something with more protein that would take longer, and she joined him in eating the pizzas and the steaks. Anna wasn't going to say anything, but her mouth said, "She called you Charlie." It had bothered her that another woman had a pet name for Anna's mate. She hadn't realized how much it bothered her until she said it out loud. Charles put down his fork and nodded. "She had a bruise that covered most of her face when Da introduced us. She was terrified and half-starved, which is why the bruise was still there. I let it go, and she continued to use the name. I thought at the time that it was a prod, a check to see if we were as bad as her first pack, if we would hit her for not following the rules."
"And now?"
Anna asked. He shook his head and started eating his steak again.
"That might still have been the case. She was brutalized. No question about that.
Even if she volunteered, And I don't think a skinwalker asks for volunteers, any more than any other witch who uses black magic does.
Anna thought about that for a while. So, maybe she didn't want to betray us.
Anna, Charles said in a gentle voice, she was here for 20 years. She could have come to my father for help at any time. She gave Hester, Jonesy, and Jericho to the skinwalker.
And then there was Devon, Anna said.
They had found Devon's body when they returned to the cars. Evidently, he'd decided to go stop her. She'd killed him as painfully as she could manage, without delaying too long. The sage that she had known would never have done that.
There never was a sage,
Anna told him. He put his hand on her knee and kept eating. He was healing as she watched him, bruises fading, cuts mending themselves. It almost killed you, she said. And she hadn't meant to say that either. She tried to lighten the stark terror she heard in her voice with a little humor. No more fighting bears for you. He set down his fork and squeezed her knee. I killed it, he told her. It was dead and rotting when I turned my back. It used magic to conceal itself, or it would never have taken me by surprise.
No more fighting dead things, she said,
but her voice wobbled on the last word. He reached for her, and she crawled on his lap, burrowing into his arms. He rested his chin on the top of her head. I will probably have gray hairs tomorrow, from the moment when I saw you throwing rocks at the bear, he told her. No more throwing rocks at bears for you. Eventually, she slid back into her seat, and they both ate some more. When neither of them could eat another bite, she left the mess in the kitchen, and they leaned on each other all the way to their bedroom. In the darkness, while he slept, she cried silently on his shoulder. Tears that she would never have allowed herself had he been awake. He worried too much over her tears. But in the darkness of their room, surrounded by his warmth and his scent, it seemed the proper time for tears. They could have lost him today. She wondered, if the skinwalker had taken him, would she have noticed? Would she have, like his grandfather's uncle, lived for months without understanding that Charles was dead?
Skinwalker.
The old medicine man's voice rolled through her head. Though she didn't think he'd ever used that word in the vision that Brother Wolf had sent her. She cried because she didn't know what else to do with the roil of fear and just missed grief that was bound up in the thought of what the skinwalker could have done. And when she was done with that, she cried for the woman she had thought was her friend. Thinking back over all the time she'd known Sage, Anna couldn't decide if Sage had been very good at deception or just very good at avoiding things that were lies. Maybe Charles would know. Maybe it didn't matter anymore. She cried for Asiel, for the romance with Sage that had been something else, and for the friend that he had lost. When they had found Devon, Asiel went very still. He picked up Devon's body without a word. He laid the bloody mess on the leather of the back seat of his Mercedes without any hesitation. Then he'd sat in the back with Devon's head on his lap. He had not protested when Anna got in the driver's seat, with Charles taking shotgun. They had taken both of them, Asiel and Devon's body, to Bran's house, where the rest of the pack would take care of them. Then she and Charles had gotten into Charles's truck and driven home. Anna cried for Devon, too, though she hadn't known him well. She'd never seen his human form, only known him through the stories of others. Asiel had liked and respected him, and goodness knew Asiel didn't respect very many people on the planet. Bran, the mysteriously amnesiac Sherwood Post. She couldn't think of anyone else offhand. Jericho, the real Jericho, she had never met. Charles said that he was pretty sure that he'd been taken the same time all of the enemy soldiers had died. Hard to tell if those men had been killed by Jericho or by the Skinwalker to draw Charles to Jericho's home. She thought that they would probably never know for sure. Hester, Jonesy, Jericho, and Devon. They had lost so many in a very short time. Anna put her ear to Charles's chest, listening to the steady beat of his heart. Suddenly every muscle in his body tensed and he sat up. He gave her a wide-eyed look. It seemed like an overreaction to her tears.
Leia
saved me, he said in a disgruntled voice. She couldn't help it. She laughed. And then she cried a little more. He made love to her, which helped both her tears and his ruffled feathers. But before he went to sleep, he murmured,
Leia is never going to let me live this down.
That's okay, Anna told him. If you were dead, you wouldn't be bothered by anything Leia had to say. I hope she torments you good and proper.
He laughed then, a warm, sleepy sound that followed her into her dreams. Bran parked the rented silver Camry on the road outside his house. There was no room for it any nearer. He left his suitcase where it was and walked home. The lights told him that everyone was awake. He felt the subtle expectation that told him the pack could feel him, even if they didn't know what was causing their restlessness. Standing on the porch, he straightened his shoulders and opened the bonds, accepting back the responsibility that he had handed to his son. For a moment, the sensation was overwhelming. He took a step sideways to balance himself. Then everything settled back into place, and it was as if he had never left, except for the missing pieces. No Hester, with her tie to Jonesy, who lit up Bran's feel of that tie like a nuclear explosion. No Jericho, who could have taught Tag a thing or two about berserker fighting. No Devon, whose sweetness had survived the years that had robbed him of all else. As Bran walked into the room, an expectant hush filled the air. Juste, looking exhausted, rose from his seat and went down on one knee before Bran.
We have failed you, sire.
Yes, they ran their packs differently in Europe.
Get up,
he said, trying not to sound irritated. It had, after all, been he who had failed them. But this pack could not deal with doubts about their leader, so he could not apologize to them, as much as it would have relieved his guilt to do so.
Get up, man, said Tag. We don't bend our knees around here. If he wants your throat, you'll know it. Otherwise, we can say we're sorry while standing on our feet.
Bran looked around the room. Aseel met his gaze with wry sympathy. According to the pithy report Charles had left on Bran's message app, Aseel didn't know that Bran's absence was because he thought Leia was their traitor. But Aseel was a wise old wolf, and it looked as though he'd worked things out.
I think, Bran said, under the circumstances, we're lucky we didn't lose more of the pack. Thank you.
They had Devon's body laid out on the bar, the dead wolf curled up as if he were merely asleep. Bran bent down and kissed his forehead. For a moment, he saw a wild, laughing young man, full of joy and adventures.
Come on, Bran, he'd said. It'll be fun. We're all werewolves. Let's join the wild hunt.
Tag, standing at Bran's shoulder, said,
Do you remember the day he talked us all into trying to find the wild hunt?
Bran's memories sometimes leaked out through the pack bonds, if he wasn't careful. Bran shook his head.
Reckless idiot. And so you told him, agreed Tag. But you came with us anyway.
That had been 600 years ago, give or take 50. And now, of those who had run that night, only Bran and Tag were left.
So I did, agreed Bran.
He stayed there for a little while, feeling his presence settle the pack down until they left by twos and threes, going home to rest, until only he was left. He found Leia in her bedroom. She was curled up in a chair, reading a magazine that she put down when he entered the room.
You, Bran said, I can apologize to. I thought you were our traitor.
I, she said. Her expression of astonishment changed to comprehension. That's why you left. If I had betrayed you, betrayed the pack, you'd have had to kill me. He nodded.
I can't do that. You know why. So I left it to Charles.
He apologized again.
I am sorry.
She raised her eyebrows. Whatever for? I'm flattered that you thought that I was our traitor. It would take a lot of ingenuity and ability to be this close to you and betray you. She didn't lie, but he knew her well enough to read the hurt in the set of her jaw.
I should have known better, he said. You have always been driven by the good of the pack.
She shrugged. I never suspected Sage. That's the nature of traitors, isn't it? She stood up and strolled toward him, leaned into him, and kissed his mouth softly. I accept your apologies, though I don't need them. You look tired. Come to bed. He unbuttoned his shirt, and she took it from him to put in the laundry hamper. She came up behind him and put her warm, skilled hands on his shoulders and kneaded them as she kissed his spine. Come to bed, she said again. He did. When Charles got up, he checked his cell phone and found he'd slept 30 hours. Charles showered, brushed his teeth, and braided his hair, listening to his Da, Anna, and Wellesley in the kitchen, cooking breakfast if his nose was any judge. Charles left the bedroom, sauntered into the kitchen, and wrapped his arms around his mate from behind while she scrambled eggs. He kissed her ear. Charles looked up at his Da, who was leaning against the wall next to the back door with his arms crossed over his chest. Bran Cornick, the Merrock, leader of most of the werewolves in North America, looked tired.
Morning, Da, he said.
Wellesley? The artist smiled at him from the other side of the kitchen, where he was buttering toast.
Good morning, Charles. Your timing is excellent. Your father was just going to tell us why he was so certain it was Leia who was our traitor.
You were right, Anna said. It was in the files Boyd sent over. Charles glanced at his Da, who gave him a rueful smile.
There were interviews Boyd conducted with each of his pack members about Leo's dealings with our enemy. One of Boyd's people overheard a conversation about 10 years ago. One of our enemy's people said something about a female werewolf they were getting information from.
Da said.
So not the financials.
Charles had been sure there had been something in the financials. Something more substantial than an overheard conversation that might or might not be relevant. His Da grimaced.
It was more damning than I made it sound. The information was something that only Leia and I knew.
And maybe Leia's best... not best friend, I'm not sure Leia has a best friend, but best confidant, anyway, Anna said.
Bran nodded. You didn't make it to Africa before you set me up to kill Leia, and...
Charles hesitated, then shrugged.
Whatever happened after that? I had plane tickets, Bran said. But the monster,
he tapped himself in the chest,
wouldn't allow me to leave. My wolf decided we needed to protect Leia.
I had a time keeping him contained in a hotel in Spokane. That's as far as I could get.
His Da's belief in Leia's guilt had really thrown him for a loop.
Do you know where Sage is?
Not at present,
said Wellesley, peacefully.
But I'm sure she will turn up.
You told me, Anna said, when we were running up the trail, that you remembered what happened at Rhea Springs. He nodded.
Yes.
Anna made an impatient sound, and Wellesley grinned at her. So what happened to you? She said.
After my wife died, I traveled a bit,
he said.
As men did in that time. And I found Surcease, of a sort, by helping other people. I garnered a reputation among the powerless and the poor.
He was a hero, said Da. He healed people. He killed people who needed killing. He saved people who needed saving.
You knew that when you sent me to him, asked Charles. Bran nodded.
And I caught the attention of a woman who called herself Daisy Hardesty, Wellesley said.
Hardesty was Sage's last name when she came to us, Charles said softly, before she changed it to Carhart. Wellesley nodded.
Daisy owned Rhea Springs. Everyone who lived there was a member of her family. People came from all over the country to be healed of their disease. Some of them disappeared, including the brother of a woman I'd helped. She got word to me, and I went to investigate.
He grimaced.
I thought I was walking into a den of murdering thieves, and instead I found a town practicing blood magic. There was a battle. People died, some by my hand. I hurt her, and she cursed me. I think she assumed the authorities would take care of my continued existence for her, and she didn't need to kill me herself to profit from it once her spell was in place.
Instead, Anna said, Charles came and spirited you away.
Indeed, said Wellesley.
Sage drove to Missoula. She'd changed to her second spare set of clothing. Devon's blood had made her look like the victim of a serial killer. So she stopped in a mall and bought two or three sets of clothing with cash. She had several credit cards and a hefty bank account under the name Samantha Harding, but she didn't want to take chances. She was certain no one knew about those accounts. Very certain. Still, Charles Cornick was good with electronic money. Better to wait until Grandma Daisy contacted her before she used credit under any name. She stole a car from the airport's long-term parking lot after switching plates with another car of the same make and color. Driving a silver Toyota Camry was as close to invisible as she could get. Deciding that she'd best avoid the bigger towns for a day or two, she pulled into a hotel in Deer Lodge. Not that Montana had many bigger towns. She'd get an apartment in Billings, she decided, getting out of her car. The hotel wasn't happy about the cash, but her spare ID and the fact that she didn't fit any criminal or terrorist profile helped her, as did her story that she was trying to get away from her husband, running to her sister in Canada. People always like to feel like they were helping someone escape something bad, especially if they didn't have to risk anything or make any effort to do it. The water in the shower was hot, and the sheets were clean. She slept deeply. And when she awoke, she was not alone.
Hello, hello, said Asil.
2 weeks later, Charles was following his mate into his Da's kitchen when his Da grabbed him and pulled him into the office. And that was how neither he nor the Merrick attended the first and last pack barbecue and music social. By the time Charles came out of the office, Leia was just wiping down the countertops, and no one was around.
I know we were in there for a few hours, he told Leia. Well, weren't there supposed to be activities until dark?
It was not dark yet. She looked at him. Tag took out his bagpipes and played The Wild Hunt, the new one, by the tallest man on Earth. Tag had gone through a new folk phase, and The Tallest Man on Earth had been one of his favorites.
On bagpipes?
He tried to imagine it. The effect would have been a lot different than the original, especially with Tag playing. Tag could play, but he liked to embellish. It wasn't that bad, she said. Not that good, mind you, but not that bad.
It didn't drive everyone away?
Bagpipes weren't everyone's cup of tea, especially if most of the people here were werewolves.
Bagpipes were loud.
His da's office had some serious soundproofing if they hadn't heard bagpipes. No, she said. It made everyone want to go for a hunt. My backyard is full of piles of clothing. Anna and I pulled all the instruments inside, and then we turned the sprinklers on. She smiled in satisfaction, and Charles grinned at the thought of the two indignant women plotting how to get back at the people who spoiled the musical part of their barbecue. He and Leia happened to be looking at each other when they smiled. Leia looked startled, and he imagined he did, too. It had probably happened, but he didn't remember the two of them ever smiling at each other. It would probably be a long time before it happened again.
I take it that this will be a one-time thing, he ventured.
She shrugged. Maybe. Anna suggested we make Tag Planet next time. He started to go, but Brother Wolf prodded him.
I have never told you thank you, he said.
Her eyebrows raised, though he knew very well she understood what he was talking about.
If you had not come back, he told her, the Skinwalker would have killed me.
She folded up the wet cloth and hung it over the faucet to dry. I don't know about that, she said. You weren't dead when we got there. If there is one thing that I have learned over the time I've spent here with your father, it is that it doesn't do to underestimate you. He folded his arms and looked at his father's mate. And for the first time, the reason he was glad he had not had to execute her for being a traitor had more to do with Leia and less to do with his da.
Thank you, he said, for coming back to help when I needed you.
She considered it a moment. I didn't do it for you. She opened a drawer and took out a clean dish towel and set it out beside the sink. With her back to him, she said, I do not like you. I have never liked you. And it is not your fault. He loves you. And he does not love me. She turned around and looked at him with clear blue eyes and an expressionless face. Charles thought about how his da's wolf had fought Bran to a standstill in Spokane, unwilling to leave Leia to her fate. When Bran knew that the safest place for everyone, if Leia had been their traitor, would have been Africa, his father, who had controlled that wolf for a very, very long time. Maybe it hadn't been just the wolf who couldn't leave.
What? Charles said carefully,
because he tried very hard not to interfere in his da's marriage.
Would be different if he loved you.
She stared at him. You cryptic son of a bitch, she said. And that's why he didn't interfere in his da's marriage.
Do you know where Anna is?
She left, Leia said coolly, as if the brief moment of accord over wet clothing had not happened. I presume she went home. He found her working her little gelding in the arena. She pointedly ignored him. Anna stiffened a little, though, and when she asked the gelding for a transition from canter to trot, she bumped down on his back off balance. The cheery little gray took a few more strides, and when it was obvious she wasn't fixing matters, he stopped.
"You forgot to sit a couple of strides before you started posting," Charles said cautiously, climbing on top of the arena fence.
If she was mad at him, greeting her with an instruction seemed to be a bad way to make things right. But he couldn't help himself. Rather than responding, or trying it again, she walked Haylight over to where Charles sat and said, "Think carefully over your next answer. Your father's life might just depend on it." He met her eyes, but he couldn't tell how serious she was.
"All right," he said.
"Did he pull you into his study so neither of you had to participate tonight?"
"I will answer that," Charles said. "But first let me say that the pack has been wounded by Sage and by the death of the wildlings. Badly wounded, in some cases."
Aseel had disappeared for a few days. When he returned, he had retreated to his roses and only come out when Kara went and got him. Bran had been shaken badly, first discovering that they had a traitor, then that business with Mercy's kidnapping, then believing that Leia was their traitor. But the worst issue, as far as his Da's confidence was concerned, was the way Sage's betrayal had totally blindsided him.
"This party was just what the pack needed. Wild Hunt and all," Charles told her. "Did Aseel go with them?"
Anna nodded. "He said someone had to mind the children."
"Da isn't at a point yet where a good run would do him any good. If he had gone out, no one would have played. And they needed to play."
Anna pursed her lips, her body swaying a little as the gelding shifted his weight. "Okay," she said. "I can see that. What about you?"
"I would have loved to go chase the Wild Hunt," Charles said truthfully. "But Wellesley sent my father a bunch of names and social security numbers, so I spent the afternoon working."
Wellesley was keeping his home in the Marox pack, but he'd asked and received permission to go out hunting witches. He'd left a few days ago with freshly minted identification, credit cards, which he now knew how to use, and a mission to drive him. "What did you find?" she asked.
"This is bigger than the Skinwalker, or at least bigger than just one Skinwalker. It looks like the Hardesty family has managed to stay under everyone's radar. They own a fast food chain, large tracts of land, and a few buildings in New York City. And they are witches. The first powerful witch family for 300 years. That we know of, at least."
Haylight threw his head up and blew, as if challenging a strange horse. Anna petted him. "And they are aimed at us?" she said in a small voice. Charles nodded.
"Looks like, but maybe not. Aseel,"
he sighed.
"Aseel found Sage."
"No wonder he's been troubled," Anna said somberly. Charles knew he didn't have to tell her that Sage was dead. He nodded.
"Aseel told Da that the Skinwalker was chasing down rumors that Wellesley, who was once Frank Bright, was here. She had targeted him originally back in the 30s because she knew about the collar spell. That was the main thing she wanted. But once she was here and she captured Jericho, the Skinwalker thought she might try to take over this pack and use it as a weapon against another branch of the family."
"Sage told Aseel all of that?" Anna asked. Charles shrugged. Anna liked Aseel. And even if it made Brother Wolf crazy, Charles was not going to interfere with that unless he had to. When she was ready to hear about how much of a monster Aseel could be, she could ask him. Or Da. But Charles expected that she wouldn't. She looked toward the tree-covered mountains, and they were worth looking at. "You know," she said, I've been wondering what I'm going to do with my life. But meeting some of the wildlings taught me something.
What's that?
When he looked at her with his grandfather's gift, he could see the connections that centered in her. Connections from the horse, from the trees, from the mountains, and from him. She was so beautiful. I may not know right now what I want to do with my life, but I have a long time to figure it out. I decided, at the party actually, that learning some things is a great way to start. Before I came out to ride, I signed myself up for online classes. She frowned at him. Do you speak Japanese? Brother Wolf said,
No.
Charles laughed at his wretched tone. Brother Wolf did not want to disappoint Anna. A wolf's cry echoed from the mountain behind their house, and before it died away, it was answered by many throats. They had not found prey, Charles could tell, just joy in the run.
Hey, pretty lady, he said, leaning forward. Does that horse side pass?
She gave him a demure smile.
Maybe, she said.
Why don't you try it? He asked.
She stepped the gelding sideways until he stood next to the fence and raised herself in her stirrups. Charles had to bend down some because her gelding was really short. But it was worth it. Kissing Anna was worth however much effort he had to make.
We will learn Japanese, said Brother Wolf.
This is Halter Graham. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Burn Bright by Patricia Briggs. This program was directed by Garrett Scott, executive producer Diane McKiernan. Text copyright 2018 by Hurog, Inc. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.